versus Snyder, 04-2099. Two lawyers who argue here quite often, Mr. Mills and Mr. Feinerman. Mr. Mills.
Good morning, Your Honor. In fact, this is the second time arguing on Mr. Santiago's case himself. As Judge Evans may remember, he was one of the many plaintiffs in the Westifer case, which was before this court about a year ago. This time, the issue is a narrow one that's before the court, that is the interplay between the exhaustion provision of the Prison Litigation Reform Act, 1997 EA, and the Illinois statute of limitations. You may recall, in the Westifer case, the defendants argued that Mr. Santiago had filed his case too early, that he had not yet exhausted. We argued that the grievance process was not available to him in that case. This case reversed the district court and sent it back down, finding that there was a question of fact as to whether or not the grievance process was available. In this case, the defendants are arguing that Mr. Santiago filed his claim too late. The fact remains that Mr. Santiago has now spent over seven years, at Illinois' highest security supermax prison in TAMS, according to the complaint, because his wife has written a book that was extraordinarily attacking the Department of Corrections and how difficult they make life for family members, and because he wrote a lot of grievances. He's yet to receive a notice saying why he was sent to TAMS. He's yet to receive an opportunity to defend himself. Defendants argue on the statute of limitations, and the district court found, that there's a sort of a stop and a start and a stop procedure for the statute of limitations. This court long ago held, in the Johnson case, that while a grievance is filed, the statute of limitations is told. That's based on Illinois law, section 13-216 of the limitation statute, which says that when a plaintiff is under a statutory prohibition, the statute does not run. The defendants argue, and the district court found, that during the time between when Mr. Santiago arrived at TAMS and when he filed his grievance, the statute ran. Then once he filed his grievance, it stopped. Once that grievance was resolved, it started again. Our contention is that under the Prison Litigation Reform Act, he was under just as much of a prohibition before he filed his grievance as he was after he filed his grievance. And it's undisputed that if you count all the time under which he had not yet exhausted his remedies, he's timely. There's no question that he filed within 2 years of the date that they denied his final grievance, or that they finally denied his grievance. That's not an issue. They only win on the statute of limitations if they get this sort of stop-start rule going. In order for that to be true, the Prison Litigation Reform Act would have to say that you're barred from filing a federal claim while a grievance is pending. That's not what it says. It says that you're barred from filing a claim until you have exhausted all your remedies. Mr. Santiago was under the exact same bar for the first year that he was at TAMS before he filed the grievance as he was after he filed the grievance, but before the director ruled. We agree with the district court. This is a very simple case. There's been some language about tolling that's been used in the various courts, but no court, certainly not this court, and as far as I can tell, any circuit court anywhere in the country has ever adopted this sort of stop-start rule. Now, of course, if Mr. Santiago had waited too long to file his grievance and they had ruled it was too late and had denied the grievance because it was untimely, then they might be able to argue that none of the time was stopped because he never promptly invoked the grievance procedure. But that's not this case. There's no question that they ruled on the merits of the grievance. There's no question that they didn't say it was too late. And as this court has held in Ricardo versus Walsh and many other cases, if you have filed a grievance and they consider it, then this court is not going to second guess as to whether it was timely or not. So our principal argument in this case is that the prohibition that was contained in the PLRA triggers the stay in Illinois law. This court has held repeatedly that, and I don't think it's in dispute, that the stay provisions of Illinois law are into effect in this case, and therefore he was barred throughout. Johnson, which is the only case that either the district court or defendants have cited in support of this, what I call the stop-start theory of the statute of limitations, has nothing to do with the stop-start. In fact, the opinion in that case, what happened was he was injured in December of 95. He didn't file his complaint until June of 98. The problem in that case was that he filed a grievance, but the defendants never ruled on it. It was a grievance that had never been ruled on. the district court in that case dismissed the complaint, saying, well, at some point you should have guessed that they, in effect, had denied it and filed, and he clearly waited too long to do so. The opinion doesn't even, in fact, mention the date on which he filed that grievance. So clearly Johnson has nothing to do with running it and then stopping running it and then running it again. Again, we think Johnson fully supports us. We don't see why this is an issue at all. We've raised some additional arguments. Even if you take the stop-start argument, our contention is that Mr. Santiago reasonably went through the process of challenging his transfer to TAMS from, in fact, the day before he got to TAMS is when he started challenging his transfer. This court in Westifer held, in relation to another plaintiff there, Vicente Rodriguez, who did the exact same thing Mr. Santiago did. He filed a grievance relating to his disciplinary report and challenged it that way rather than directly challenging the transfer to TAMS. This court held at 580 in the Westifer opinion that there was a question of fact as to whether or not those were the appropriate steps. Mr. Rodriguez claimed in the Westifer case that he took that approach based on the advice of his counselor. Mr. Santiago, in this case, has a letter from the deputy director, the official who has the power to approve transfers to TAMS, saying he wasn't going to address Mr. Santiago's complaints because the disciplinary process was still underway. So Mr. Santiago reasonably thought that, therefore, he should be focusing his efforts on challenging the disciplinary process.
Do you think that these stop-start tolling things are inappropriate in any type of case? Because I mean, we use it all the time in, say, habeas cases where you have a year to file. If you have a pending motion during the pendency of that motion in state court, the clock stops and it starts again when that's denied. And it just seems like it's a fairly common way of applying a statute of limitations that we do that in other contexts. And why isn't that appropriate here?
Because the statute in this case is very specific. The habeas corpus statute is quite different in terms of how you should calculate statute of limitations. The Prison Litigation Reform Act in this case clearly says that you are barred from filing anything until you are fully exhausted. It doesn't say while you're trying to exhaust. It says until you're fully exhausted, period. So, and this Illinois statute is also clear. During any time of statutory prohibition, there's a stay on the statute. Mr. Santiago was prohibited from filing a federal claim at any time up until the final denial of his grievance. So reading the clear language of both the PLRA and the Illinois statute together, there's no suggestion of a stop-start there. He was under the exact same prohibition during the first year that he was at TAMS as he was in the second year when the grievance was pending. It just doesn't make any sense to read it one for, I mean, he wasn't under a prohibition at some point. Certainly if I'd come in and filed before he even filed the grievance, they would have been the first ones to argue, you're way too early. He hasn't exhausted yet. The PLRA bars you. No further questions,
thank
and
you.
I will reserve the rest of my time.
Mr. Feinerman.
May it please the Court, Mr. Mills, I'm Gary Feinerman from the Office of the Illinois Attorney General here on behalf of the defendants' appellees. The District Court correctly ruled that Santiago's complaint was barred by the two-year statute of limitations applicable to 1983 suits brought in Illinois. The statute's 2 years, and as we set forth in our brief, 31 months of untold time passed between the time the injury occurred, which was the transfer to TAMS on investigatory status, and the time suit was filed in October of 2002. The grievance process took place from April 2000 through November of 2000. It was told during that time under Johnson. So you take away 7 months of told time from the 38 and you leave 31 months, which is greater than 2 years. Now, Mr. Mills's argument rests on the premise that there should tolling should apply not only between April of 2000 and November of 2000, when the grievance was actually pending, but also prior to the filing of the grievance in April of 2000, between the transfer to TAMS in August of 99 and April of 2000. And he argues that there shouldn't be this stop-start process. As Judge Evans noted, the stop-start is common with respect to statutes of limitations. The habeas statute 2244D2, which tolls the time for filing a habeas petition during the pendency of state post-conviction proceedings, that applies in precisely the same way that we're arguing it applies here. The tolling does not apply prior to the time that the prisoner files a state post-conviction, but applies only when the state post-conviction proceeding is proceeding. Johnson itself, the case that we both rely upon, holds that the statute of limitations is told under 1983 in the PLRA only while the inmate is exhausting his remedies, not before the time he files a grievance, could have but did not file a grievance, but only while it's being exhausted. And the analogy to habeas is a fruitful one. In Woodford versus Nago, the Supreme Court's decision from earlier this year, and a number of this court's decisions, Pozo and Strong, with respect to statutes of limitations and tolling, analogies are often drawn with the habeas statute, and we think the same analogy applies here and actually has applied here under the Johnson case.
When an inmate today is transferred to TAMS and claims that for some reason it's an improper transfer, it was retaliation for filing suits or something like that, how much time does the inmate have to file a formal grievance on that?
Your question assumes that it is possible to file a grievance to challenge a transfer to TAMS.
Yeah, assuming that's I understand that.
And that's at issue on the Westifer remand, and it has not been resolved yet. It will be resolved.
Let's suppose that you have a right to challenge a transfer in some situations. How much time does the inmate have?
The default time limit in the regulations is 60 days. Now, when an inmate is transferred on administrative status or investigatory status, non-disciplinary status, you get there's some process that occurs within days after the transfer to TAMS to see whether the transfer was appropriate or not. And then I suppose 60 days after that, the inmate can file a grievance challenging the transfer to TAMS. I believe that if you're transferred on disciplinary status, which Mr. Sontag was not transferred immediately into disciplinary status, he was transferred on investigatory status to TAMS, I think that you have to wait until the disciplinary status ends, and then there's an annual review after that where you get to, there's a hearing and you get to show up, the inmate gets to show up and present evidence and make arguments as to why the inmate should no longer be at TAMS, and it's the department's position that you can then grieve that decision within 60 days of when it's made. So what Mr. Mills argued in his brief is that he, of course, says that the tolling applies at all time prior to the filing of the grievance. And the premise, at least in the brief, is that Santiago could not have grieved the transfer until he received the final disciplinary decision in April 2000, and therefore it would be unfair to charge him with the time between August 99 when he went to TAMS and April 2000 when he finally received the final disciplinary decision. But that conflates two separate injuries. The first injury was the transfer to TAMS on investigatory status. The second injury was the final disciplinary decision, the discipline that was imposed upon him in April 2000. Now, the two injuries arise from the same set of operative facts. It arises from what Mr. Santiago is alleged to have done at Menard Prison with respect to the conspiracy to attack the guards and the gang activities. But they constitute independent injuries, and we know that because the transfer to TAMS occurred in August of 99, months before any discipline was imposed. So they are two separate things. And so while Mr. Santiago could not have grieved the final disciplinary decision until he received it, and we're assuming that's in April of 2000, he could have grieved the transfer as soon as it happened back in August 99. And because he could have done that, he should be charged with the time between August 99 and April 2000, which puts him over the 2 years for purposes of the statute of limitations. Terms, very briefly, in terms of the letter from Deputy Director McVickers, Mr. Santiago relies upon this court's holding in Westifer with respect to V. Rodriguez, which is dealt with in footnote 11 of the Westifer decision. But in Westifer, V. Rodriguez, there was a question of fact of whether V. Rodriguez was told that he could grieve the transfer together with his grievance of the final disciplinary decision. The letter from Deputy Director McVickers, which is Document 20, Exhibit 12, does not tell Mr. Santiago that he has to grieve both of them at the same time. It's something that Mr. Santiago might have inferred from the letter, but there wasn't the direction that was at issue in Westifer. So Mr. Santiago cannot justifiably rely upon the letter from Deputy Director McVickers as an excuse for not filing his grievance earlier. I don't believe the other arguments that Mr. Santiago makes were addressed in our brief. I don't believe Mr. Mills addressed those at arguments, so we'll rest on our brief on those. And unless there are any questions, we would ask this court to affirm the judgment of the district court.
Mr. Mills, anything further?
I completely agree with Mr. Feinerman that the current deadline for filing grievances is 60 days. At the time, however, it was 6 months. It's since been shortened, which would help to eliminate this problem. 6 months was the time then. But again, my position is it's irrelevant what the time limit was. They considered the grievance. Therefore, it was timely as far as they were concerned, which also suggests that Mr. Santiago did it right. If, in fact, he was supposed to have filed this grievance the day he arrived, then why, since it wasn't filed until 7-8 months later, did they consider it timely? Since even then the time limit was 6 months. So it's not only Mr. McVicker's letter which led Mr. Santiago to believe that this was the right way to do it. It was, in fact, the way the department processed his grievance. It never said, oh, gee, you should have filed this within 6 months. You waited far too long. They resolved the grievance, which suggests that he did exactly what he was supposed to do. As Mr. Feinerman just said, both the transfer and the grievance and the disciplinary process were based on the same core of operative facts. Interestingly, now he's admitting they sent him to TAMS to punish him for this before he was in fact found guilty of it. I'm not quite sure how they can do that, which suggests due process is really a problem. But nonetheless, why would you challenge it in two completely separate ways? He was challenging that. He said he didn't do it, and he was doing that the right way. He was appearing before the adjustment committee, trying to call his witnesses, trying to get them to look at a videotape that he said occurred of this meeting, which he said was a Christian prayer group rather than a gang meeting, and they refused to do so. So it's our contention they acted reasonably, that their own conduct suggests that he acted reasonably because they considered the grievance, didn't make an exception saying you were reasonable for being out of time, just considered it as if it was timely. So it's our contention they acted properly, but our basic contention, it doesn't matter. He was barred until he got a final order. As Mr. Feinerman said, the habeas statute is quite different. It specifically says it stayed during the pendency. The PLRA does not say that you're prohibited during pendency. It says you're barred until a final ruling. Thank you.
Thank you. The case will be taken under advisement. Thank you to both counsel.